Hare Krishna. Today is the last day of the holy month of Purushottam, the Adhik Mass. This is a month which is empowered by the Lord Krishna, by the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, to have exactly all the powers, opulences, etc. as the Lord Himself. And anyone who performs devotional service in this month gains tremendous spiritual benefit. So, earlier on in this month, we have talked about the glories of this month. Today being the last day, several devotees inquired about the fast breaking for those who did have or did maintain a fast. The answer is that today being the last day, the new moon day or the Amavasya Tithi, the Tithi ends tomorrow morning at 2:26 a.m., which means in the night, late tonight, 2:26. So basically you break the fast after that. Tomorrow the first day begins of the next month, and you break the fast by taking whatever you haven't taken or whatever you have abstained from in the last month or maybe the last 5 days or in whatever period. So for those of you who observed some vrata, some vow for the whole month, let's say you didn't take grains or something, then you break it with grains. For those of you who took no food, no water for the last 30 days, you can take a little food and a little water in the morning. And for those of you who performed a vow or a vrata, fasting for the last 5 days, abstaining from grains, etc., you can break it with a little grains in the morning when you wake up. So that's all there is to it. There are so many rules and everything, we won't get into all that. But the important thing is that when you wake up in the morning, come to the temple, attend the Mangala Arati, bring some flowers for Krishna if you can, offer them to the lotus feet of the deities. It is also recommended in the scriptures that you donate something in charity to the Brahmanas to break your vow, to complete your vow rather, to break your fast and to complete your vow. Any form of charity is good enough. The different scriptures talk of various types of charity. The highest charity is to give the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in any case, these are some of the things that you can do. But remember, the most important thing is to cultivate the devotional spirit towards the Lord. So that said, since this is Purushottam month, and Lord Jagannath in Puri is also known as Purushottam. His abode, Puri, is also known as Purushottam Kshetra. Last time we talked something about Lord Jagannath, and I thought today and tomorrow also we'll continue with that theme. And today specifically, I would like to talk about the opportunity that those devotees have who, for some or the other reason, specifically the reason of not being born in a Hindu family, are not permitted to go into the temple of Lord Jagannath to have darshan of the Lord. Of course, that is not a restriction that we agree with at all, as we have emphasized, and our movement, our institution is trying its best to try to see that this rule can be changed, but it's a long-standing custom, many, many centuries. So it's not easy to change that rule. For us, we accept that devotion to the Supreme Lord doesn't depend on anything material. It doesn't depend on your community, your nationality, your ethnicity, or any such consideration. Now, there is a deity in Jagannath Puri, in the temple, who is called Patita Pavana Jagannath. How many of you have heard of this deity? Patita Pavana Jagannath, not the main deity of Jagannath, but there's another deity called Patita Pavana Jagannath. Patita means fallen, Pavana means the savior or the deliverer. So he is Jagannath, who is the savior of the fallen souls. How many of you have heard of Patita Pavan Jagannath? Okay. How many of you have seen Patita Pavan Jagannath? Okay, where is he? Where is he in the temple? Sorry? At the entrance of the temple. There are four gates to the temple complex. There are very high walls. And there are four gates. It's much like a fortress, you see. And the eastern gate is called the Simhadwar or the Lion Gate. And just at the gate, there is this deity of Lord Jagannath, which you can see even from outside. So even if somebody is not permitted to enter into the temple, that person can simply stand outside and take darshan of Patita Pavan Jagannath. And of course, that deity is non-different from the original deity who is inside. And the interesting thing about Patita Pavan Jagannath is that he doesn't have hands, he doesn't have a torso, he just has only the face. And the second unusual or unique feature about this deity is that he stands alone. In the temple, Jagannath stands with Baladev, Subhadra and Sudarshan. But here, he stands alone. The third unusual feature is that the deities of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra are made from wood. Whereas the deity of Patita Pavan is not made from wood. This deity is made with a mixture of some very special fragrant substances. Frankincense, musk, and scented oils made of camphor and aguru and so on. So such are the substances, is a combination of many, many items. And this deity is made from these substances. And so when you enter, or when you're just about to enter, as you stand outside, you can have darshan of the Patita Pavana deity. So over the years, many, many devotees who have been not permitted to enter the temple, and also those perhaps who didn't have time to enter the temple, could simply have darshan of this Patita Pavan deity and achieve satisfaction, and in fact the complete benefit of having darshan of Lord Jagannath himself. Actually, there is a chakra on top, a wheel, the Sudarshan chakra on top of the temple of Lord Jagannath, as is a custom for all Vaishnava temples. And it is also said that simply by taking darshan or looking at this wheel that's on top of the temple, one gets the benefit of seeing Lord Jagannath. So even though there are these rules that are quite unfair and somehow they are there, but for devotees who can't go in, you can do these two things. You can look at the wheel, the Sudarshan chakra at the top of the temple, and you can also see the deity of Patita Pavana, Jagannath. Now there are various historical accounts, and there are some differences among scholars about actually which one of these historical accounts is actually historical, meaning which one is the fact. But anyway, there are several accounts about how the Patita Pavan deity came there, how this deity was installed. One account is that there was a great Muslim devotee of Lord Jagannath called Salabek. And in order to favor him, Lord Jagannath manifested like that. Another incident that's mentioned is that there was a king, the Gajapati, the ruler of Puri, who was forcibly converted to Islam by the Muslim invaders. But he remained a devotee of Jagannath and he was not permitted to enter. So for his deliverance and pleasure, the Lord manifested as Jagannath, Patita Pavana Jagannath. The third reason is, some say, he manifested for the pleasure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the fourth account is that he manifested for the benefit of Haridas Thakur, who was a very intimate associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who also happened to be born in a Muslim family. But he was a great devotee of Krishna. In fact, he is the authority in the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. And he was appointed to this, or he was given this name rather, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So today I'd like to talk briefly about the two personalities I mentioned earlier, Salabed, and the second is Ramachandra Dev. Very fascinating stories. The history of the world is a very turbulent history, full of violence, full of bloodshed, full of all sorts of forcible impositions of things and violence. So, a brief history of India, because it's all connected with the history of this temple. Soon after the Muslim invaders came in, the Mughals, and before them others came in, there were many attempts to destroy temples. And as far as temples of Krishna are concerned, we all know the story of how many of the original deities, most of them actually, the original deities in Vrindavan were transferred to Rajasthan, another state, where the Rajput kings who were Vaishnavas then protected them. So this was the situation all over India, wherever the Muslim rule was prevailing. So Jagannath Puri had this massive temple, and that was well known all over the country, that used to draw hundreds of thousands of pilgrims and devotees every year. So naturally the word about the glories of this temple reached the ears of the Muslim rulers in Delhi. That was their headquarters. As far back as 1300 something, the first invasion of Jagannath Puri happened and the temple was desecrated. So, and this is common in many places. But that did not dampen the spirit of the devotees of Jagannath. They continued to worship Lord Jagannath with the same faith and devotion. And repeated attempts were made. Sometimes they were foiled in their attempts by the local kings of Puri and the surrounding areas. Sometimes they partially succeeded. So sometime in the 16th century, or maybe the 17th century, there was a king called Jahangir, who was a Mughal emperor in Delhi. He was the son of King Akbar. You've all heard of Akbar, a very famous king. So now Jahangir was not as liberal as his father. Amongst all the Mughal kings, Akbar was perhaps the least illiberal of all of them. And he didn't mind the other religions flourishing. Jahangir perhaps was not as liberal as his father. So he had an associate or a friend whose name was Lal Beg, who was also a Muslim. And Lal Beg was notorious for being a hater of those, of anybody who worshipped deities. They were iconoclasts. Iconoclasts means they didn't like deities. And they basically destroyed temples, smashed idols and deities and so on. So his reputation as an iconoclast came to the ears of King Jahangir, who was impressed. And he said, okay, now I appoint you as a governor of the states of Orissa and Bengal. So he was sent there as a viceroy or governor. And then he decided that he would destroy the major temples in that area. So then he was parked for a while in the city of Cuttack, and there was a fort there, Barabati Fort. So he set out from this fort towards Jagannath Puri to attack the temple of Lord Jagannath. Now as he was moving with his army, he happened to come to a village called Dandamukundapur. And in that village there was a pond. And as the viceroy was passing, he happened to see a very beautiful young lady who was a Brahmin lady, but she was a widow. She was bathing in the pond. So he was captivated by her beauty. And he decided on the spot that he would forcibly abduct her and make her his wife. So naturally he had his army and he was personally very physically strong compared to her. So she had no choice. So she was dragged and physically taken to his palace. And she repeatedly tried to free herself, but he was far too strong for her. So he subdued her and insisted that she must become his wife. Finally realizing that she had no choice anyway, and coming to know that the king, this viceroy, was headed for Jagannath temple and he planned to actually destroy the temple, and she was a great devotee of Krishna and Jagannath herself. So she agreed to become his wife, but she laid down a condition. The condition was that henceforth you will not attack any temples and you will not try to destroy any deities anywhere. So that the viceroy was smitten by her beauty anyway. He wanted her at any cost. So he agreed. And he stayed back in Bharavati. Meanwhile, she was given a Muslim name. She was converted. She was given a Muslim name, Fatima Bibi. And then in course of time, then she bore him a son. And Lal Beg then named him as Sala Beg. And he trained him up as a warrior, because he himself was a soldier, a warrior. And he grew up to be a warrior. Now, as it happens in the world of politics and statesmanship and ruling and kings and so on, somebody in Delhi who was close to Jahangir didn't like Lal Beg. He was also a religious person, a Qazi or a Mullah or something like that. So he basically said something bad about, repeatedly, about Lal Beg to the king. So the king immediately dismissed him, dismissed Lal Beg from his position as the governor and asked him to return to Delhi immediately. So then Lal Beg didn't have an option. So he left and he was out on expedition somewhere. And as he left Cuttack and was going, another of his adversaries, who was envious of him, attacked him and killed him. So Lal Beg died, and he left behind his wife Fatima Bibi and also his son Sala Beg. Now by this time Sala Beg was growing up to be a young man. He was being trained in warfare, and another governor had come, and this governor also tried to repeatedly attack various places and become strong, get a stronghold, a foothold in that whole area. So Sala Beg also became a warrior. He was also fighting in these armies on behalf of the Muslim kings and governors. One time, Sala Beg was badly injured in a battle. And then he came home, and no amount of medical attention was of any help. And all the doctors gave up hope and they said, we can't do anything more. So he was distraught with grief and he was in a very painful condition. His mother couldn't tolerate the pain of her son. So she came to him and said, my dear son, there's only one hope for us. You must take shelter of Vrindavan Chandra, the moon of Vrindavan. He is very, very merciful even to the most fallen. And he is always he comes to the rescue of those who surrender at his lotus feet. And Vrindavan Chandra is none other than Krishna. So Sala Beg was surprised. He said, mother, you're a faithful Muslim. How come you're talking about Vrindavan Chandra and Krishna and you're asking me to worship Krishna at this time? I don't understand this. So then she said, son, I have to tell you something. Then she narrated the whole history. She said, actually, this is how I came to be marry your father. This is what actually happened. And I'm actually a great, she didn't say great, but she said, I'm a devotee of Krishna. And I grew up because my parents were very, very staunch devotees of Krishna, and they trained me. And we had our village temple where I would serve the deity of Gopinath. I would do little errands and I would do all sorts of services. When my husband died, because she was married off by her husband, by her parents to another Brahmin, but that young man happened to die for some reason, so she was widowed at a young age. So she was spending a lot of her time doing devotional service. So then she revealed the secret to him. So he said, so mother, you have carried me in your womb and you have delivered me and taken care of me all these years. So I will do whatever you say. But the point is that I don't know anything about Krishna. Who is Krishna? How do I worship him? How do I get access to him? You know, so then she said, all right, I'll tell you what my father taught me many, many years ago when I was a young girl. Said his name is Krishna and he lives in Vrindavan. His father's name is Nanda Maharaj, his mother's name is Yashoda. And Nanda Maharaj is the lord of the gopas, of the residents of Vrindavan, who are basically a cowherd community. And Krishna is his son, but actually, in reality, he is the lord of all living entities in the universe. Krishna is very beautiful to look at. He has a dark bluish complexion like a fresh rain cloud. His eyes are like pearls and his are like lotus petals. His teeth are like pearls. His complexion shines, he's radiant, very effulgent. He's got black curling hair. And his glances are very, very attractive. His lips are like red bimba fruit. And he stands very gracefully bent at three places in his body. He's very expert in playing the flute. He performs many, many charming pastimes in Vrindavan with his associates. His chief associate is Srimati Radharani. And he also has many other associates. And Krishna is the lord of all nectarian mellows of rasas. And anyone who becomes a devotee of Krishna, following the footsteps of these residents of Vrindavan, will also become a great devotee and learn to love Krishna like them. So, and she went on and on explaining everything she had heard about Krishna, whatever she knew about Krishna. And he was hearing with rapt attention. For one thing, he was very devoted to his mother. He was very grateful to his mother. And second, he was in a helpless condition. So he knew he had no choice. So he was clutching at whatever option was available. But as his mother was narrating the glories of Krishna, some changes started happening in his heart. And then he inquired, but mother, we are here in Orissa, and Krishna is there in Vrindavan, which is thousands of kilometers away. So if I am calling out to Krishna from here, how will he hear me and how will he understand what I am saying? So she said, don't worry. She quoted some proverbs in the local language which indicated that if anyone took shelter of Krishna by calling out his names, Krishna would immediately come to his rescue and would give him shelter. So she told him, don't worry, Krishna will hear your prayers. He will come to your rescue. You simply, with your full heart, surrender to him utterly. And then she told him, all right, celebrate, let us do one thing. Now you meditate on this Krishna, this Gopinath, for 12 days consecutively. And within 12 days, I assure you, Gopinath will appear before you and he will rectify, he will make sure you are all right. He will rid you of this ailment that you have. So Salabek started meditating on Krishna, depending exactly according to the instructions of his mother, who had now become like his guru. And she had described him so vividly that he was picturing Krishna in his mind and he was meditating on him. And he was chanting his names as his mother had told him. And he was doing it very intensely. He was a very intense person anyway. And now that he had taken faithfully to his mother's instructions, he very intensely took shelter of Krishna. One day passed, 2 days, 3 days, 9 days, 10 days, 12 days. Way into the 12th day, there was still no let up in the pain. He was extremely in a painful condition. He just didn't know what to do. Then in sheer helplessness, he told his mother, Mother, I think 12 days are over. What do we do now? His mother initially had assured him to give him confidence that if in 12 days this doesn't happen, then both of us will give up our lives. Because she knew that without her, his son, without her son to protect her, again some misfortune would happen like it happened to her when she was a young girl. It wasn't a safe place to be in. So anyway, she had promised him that both of them would then give up their lives. So then she said, "Don't worry, Salabek. Krishna is known as the one who is very affectionate to his devotees. He sometimes tests the patience of his devotees, but he never lets down his devotees. You can rely on him. Don't lose hope. Don't lose faith. Let your faith and conviction be strong. Krishna will come to your rescue." And that night, the 12th night, when Salabek slept, in his dream, Gopinath appeared. And he said, "Salabek, don't you have faith? Why are you worrying? Now take this." He gave him some ashes of vibhuti. And he said, "Apply this on your wounds and everything will be all right." So then, that's what he did. And when he woke up in the morning, his wounds had disappeared. And he was painless, and he awoke with a start, and that marked an extraordinary transformation. From that moment on, he became a great lover of Krishna. He was like a madman, in complete ecstasy of Vrindavan's love. His mother was filled with joy. And then he said, "Mother, I want to go to Jagannath Puri to have darshan of Lord Jagannath." She said, "Yes, you have my blessing, certainly go on." So he ran, practically ran. He was so eager for darshan of Lord Jagannath. He had heard about Jagannath a lot from his mother in these days, not before that. So as he ran very expectantly and eagerly to Puri, but when he arrived there, he was in for a very big disappointment. Because everyone knew him as a Muslim, and Salabek was such a fierce warrior, he was a son of Lalabek. So everybody knew that he wasn't entitled to enter into the temple as per the rules of the temple. So when he tried to enter in, the doorkeepers prohibited him from entering. The pandas, the priests, spoke very harshly to him, mocked him, and threw him out basically, didn't let him come in. But now he was not the same Salabek who would carry a sword and start killing everybody. He accepted that in a very humble condition. And he piteously beseeched Jagannath from outside to bestow his mercy upon him, but of no avail. Then he went to the other temples, but in no temple would they allow him in. He went to the other monasteries, there too there was no luck. And Salabek became very, very disappointed, very depressed. So one of the narrations say that when he was lying outside like that, pitifully beseeching the mercy of Lord Jagannath, that Lord Jagannath actually appeared and manifested as the Patita Pavana deity outside. That's one of the stories that's said there in folklore, in traditional folklore in Jagannath Puri. So in any case, that may have happened at that time, or it may have happened later also. It probably happened later. Anyway, because of his extreme disappointment of not being able to see Lord Jagannath, he thought, "Let me go to Vrindavan." So after having stayed in Jagannath Puri for a while, he decided to go to Vrindavan. And in those days there were no railway trains and cars, and he didn't have a horse or a chariot or anything, so he walked. And as he walked, he was simply singing songs about Krishna. He was composing songs. Somehow he was blessed by the Lord to be an expert poet. And he was composing songs and song after song. And his songs are very well known in Orissa. He is one of the most famous poets of Orissa next to Jayadev Goswami, so you can imagine. Every morning after Mangal Arati, in the Jagannath temple, you will find devotees who will come and recite the prayers from Gita Govinda, at least some of them, for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. And then, after that, they will also recite some of the songs that were composed by Salabai. He is known as Bhakta Kavi Salabai in Orissa. Bhakta means devotee, Kavi means poet. So he is next to Jayadev Goswami, who is by any standards the most famous poet of Orissa. He is very close up there in the same league as Jayadev Goswami. Is anyone here from the state of Orissa originally? Nobody. Okay, I also don't understand the language. But our devotees who are from that state, they have told me that they all learned these songs in their childhood. And that every child in Orissa will know about Salabai. And they will know at least some of his songs. Especially the famous song called Jagbandhu He Gosai. So anyway, he was composing these songs and singing them with his full heart. His songs are full of the pathos of separation from Krishna. Bittersweet songs. Bittersweet because the separation is bitter, but it's also ecstatic. In Vrindavan, the separation that the devotees felt from Krishna when Krishna left Vrindavan was also bittersweet. Like poison and nectar combined. The separation, the physical separation was painful, but because they weren't actually separated in spirit, they were always thinking of Krishna, meditating on his words, his form, his beauty, his pastimes and so on. So in an absolute sense, there was no separation. So they actually felt intense spiritual bliss even in that apparent grief. So spiritual grief of separation is something that's very difficult to understand or to describe, because it's not grief, it's something else. So Kavi Salabai's songs are in that mood, that bittersweet feeling of separation from Krishna, and especially compounded further because of separation from Jagannath. And as we have described in earlier classes, Jagannath Puri is a land of separation. Viprlambha Kshetra, Viraha Kshetra. Jagannath is a form of Krishna in which he feels separation from the residents of Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a form of Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani in which there is separation from Krishna. So that is why Mahaprabhu came and settled in Jagannath Puri rather than Vrindavan. So this was Kavi Salabai's mood. He imbibed that mood of separation perfectly. And he walked all the way to Vrindavan. And it is said that he stayed there for a whole year. And in that year, naturally, he had darshan of all the deities, he would associate with the Vaishnavas there, sing songs with them, glorify Krishna with them. He didn't realize how the 1 year passed. So he composed songs not just in the local Odia language of Orissa, but also in Sanskrit, in Hindi, in probably Bengali language also, and in the local language of Vrindavan, which is called Braj Bhasha. So he's got songs in all these languages. You see, one of the 26 qualities of a great devotee is that he's also a poet, Kavi, a philosopher and a poet. And when we look at such great devotees in the past, they were spontaneous poets. It's not that they had to sit and struggle with their intelligence. Okay, this doesn't rhyme with this. So let me see now, I've written this. And then, okay, here's another, next line. No, the word isn't right, no. These were spontaneous outpourings of devotion. Not in their control. They would just flow, the words would flow. Because the heart was so full of devotion. In connection to Dhruva Maharaj's composition of prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he was touched by the conch shell of the Lord on his head, Srila Prabhupada explains that devotional compositions are not a product of the material energy or of material intellect or of material ability like being a good material poet or something like that. These are directly a product of the spiritual energy of the Lord. Only when one is empowered by Krishna can one actually recite, compose and recite poems like this. There are many, many great examples like this in history. So Kavi Salapet's mood was like that, poem after poem, song after song. But then even though he was in Vrindavan one time, he started feeling something missing. What was he missing? What was he missing there in Vrindavan? Jagannath. He said, I'm from the land of Jagannath and I'm missing Jagannath. So he had a sudden inspiration in his heart. I want to go back to Puri and have darshan of Jagannath. In fact, I want to go back and be in time for the Rath Yatra. But then he realized time is short because he had to walk back. It would take a good 1 month to walk back. So then he realized that I won't be in time for the Rath Yatra. But then he figured I might just be in time for the return Rath Yatra, which is called the Bahuta Rath, the Ulta Rath. You know, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, they go out to the Rath Yatra to the Gundicha temple. They stay there for 8 or 9 days and then they come back in the return Rath Yatra. So that is a wonderful opportunity where devotees see the Lord. Even those who aren't allowed into the temple, they have darshan of Lord Jagannath openly. Everyone and everyone can have darshan because they are on the cart. So he thought, maybe, just maybe, I'll make it in time for the Ulta Rath and then I can see the Lord. So he rushed out from Vrindavan. But you know, as much as you rush when you're walking, how much can you walk? How fast can you walk? So he was doing his best. He was walking as fast as he could. Meanwhile, the Rath Yatra started. Their lordships reached Gundicha temple. 8 days passed. Now it was time for the return journey. And the return journey started. The Rath Yatra began. And Kavi Salapet was walking fast, he was running sometimes, walking. And he was still outside Jagannath Puri. And he wasn't in and he was praying to the Lord. At that time he composed, as he was walking, he composed his famous song, Jagabandhu Hai Gosai. I wish I knew the Odia language so I could have sung those songs. But I can't sing it in the authentic way. It needs an Odia devotee who will sing it exactly like that. We will mess it up. So they know how to sing. So anyway, he composed this famous song. And actually they say every child in Puri, in Orissa will know Jagabandhu Hai Gosai, at least some lines of this song. So he was basically petitioning the Lord to wait. Please, please, please wait. Please, let me come. I'm coming, I'm coming. Of course, later he would regret that, you know, I was asking the Lord to change his plans, to alter his schedule because of me. So he was petitioning the Lord, beseeching him, begging him, please let me have your darshan because once you go in the temple, I won't be able to see you. Now, as you know, the Rath Yatra, sometimes Lord Jagannath just decides to stop. And that is known to all devotees. And no known force in the universe can move him if he doesn't want to move. It happened several times during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stay in Jagannath Puri as well. And these episodes have been described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So Jagannath moves only when he wants to move, impelled by the love that he has for his devotees and by the love his devotees feel for him. So now Lord Jagannath was thinking, my dear devotee Salabeg is rushing and rushing and he hasn't reached here yet. I can't go away like that and not give him darshan and make him heartbroken, so I'll halt here. So he decided to halt. And the sun was blazing, then sometimes it would rain. For those of you who are familiar with the climate during the Rath Yatra, you know it's like a very humid, very sultry, can be very hot. So Jagannath just decided to stay put. And everybody was pulling and pulling and pulling, but of no avail. Then they realized Jagannath wants to stay. And Jagannath made known his desires in his own unique ways. Sometimes he does so through dreams to the king, sometimes to the priest, and so on and so forth. Anyway, so Salabek, running and walking and running, he somehow reached Puri, and he came to the place called Balagandi, where the rath had stopped. And then he came in front of the Lord and he prostrated himself and was in complete ecstasy. He could believe it, that the Lord was so merciful that he actually halted the whole rath just for him. And then he, on the spur of the moment again, composed another song, and glorifying Lord Jagannath and begging forgiveness for him having interfered with the Lord's program like this. And all his songs, every one of them, Kavi Salabek talks of himself in a very demeaning way. He talks of himself as a fallen Yavana. I'm just a fallen soul, but you are so merciful on me. So here also he was praying like that. Meanwhile, the word spread everywhere. And everyone was wonderstruck. Even the king was wonderstruck. The priests were wonderstruck. And they were thinking, what can we do now? But of course, it still couldn't allow him inside the temple because that was the rule. So anyway, Jagannath moved on after that, after he had darshan of Salabek. And Salabek had darshan of Jagannath. And then the cart moved on. And then Salabek was so overwhelmed with gratitude and ecstasy that he came back and made his residence at the place where the Lord had stopped in his rath, the Balagandi. And he spent his life, the rest of his life, just glorifying Jagannath like that and composing many, many more songs. And the king of Puri, along with the priests, understanding the devotion of Salabek and his extraordinary caliber as a devotee, the king donated a portion of land there for his samadhi. And he was actually placed in samadhi there, something that is done only for elevated devotees, not for the ordinary yavanas or vaishyas and so on. And he was interred in that samadhi with all the regular mantras and the priests participating and everything. They did the full procedure that they would have done for any of their pandas or any sannyasi or, who was an exalted devotee. And then he was placed in samadhi there, and the samadhi is still there today. So those of you who go to Puri, I believe some devotees are going this time for them. May have already reached there, it's too late. They may have left already. So next time you go to Puri, do visit the place of the samadhi of Bhakta Kavi Salabek. So then Salabek remains there, testimony to the fact that devotion to the Lord has no impediments. Doesn't matter what family we come from, what religious background we come from, what we are, but the Lord Jagannath is not the Lord only of the Hindus. He is not the Lord only of Indians. He is the Lord of the universe. He is the Lord of innumerable universes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of everything there is. So the story of Kavi Salabek is very inspirational for us. So even if we are not able to enter into the temple, never mind. Remember Salabek and take darshan of Patita Pavana Jagannath. And now by Prabhupada's mercy and arrangement, Lord Jagannath is everywhere. Many of our ISKCON temples have Jagannath deities. Many of our devotees have Jagannath deities at home. Many of our devotees have Jagannath deities at home. And briefly, because we don't have much time, I'll tell you the story of Ramachandra Dev II, the second pastime of how it is said that Patita Pavana manifested there. Now he was a brave, valiant ruler of Puri, also an equally great devotee of Jagannath, as were the kings who ruled there. And very bravely he resisted the onslaught of the invasion of the Muslim armies. And he was successful. However, one time in a battle he lost. And he was taken captive, he was taken prisoner by the Muslim king. Now I forget all those names. So anyway, the king, or the viceroy actually of the king, he took him prisoner and kept him imprisoned in his place for maybe more than a year. And in those days it was also the practice that when they conquered kings, they would either give the king conditions. If you want to remain the king here, you have to convert your religion, become a Muslim. We'll let you live, otherwise you died. Now Ramachandra Dev knew that if he didn't accept that condition which this king had made to him or the viceroy, that he would go and attack Jagannath Puri temple. So he was in a great dilemma, the mother of all dilemmas. He says, if I don't convert, then they're going to attack and devastate the temple, probably desecrate the temple, destroy the deities. And that's something that he couldn't even imagine in his dreams. He would never have let that happen if he had a choice. On the other hand, if he became a Muslim, then he would have to change his practices. He wouldn't be able to enter into the temple of Jagannath. He wouldn't be able to be a devotee of Jagannath, at least externally. So he decided to make that great sacrifice. It was a great ordeal for him. Finally he agreed. And the viceroy then married his daughter to the king. And then Ramachandra Dev got some Muslim name. And soon after that, after he got married, he was released from prison and now he became the king. He resumed his position as the king of the place. Now he came back to his palace and his queens, his other queens who had been in the palace, they were horrified to see him as a Muslim and with a new name, and they said, nothing doing, we have nothing to do with you. And they all left him and went back to their homes from where they had come, their father's homes. The citizens of Puri were equally horrified. The Pandas wouldn't let him in and he wasn't let into the temple. He wasn't allowed to sweep the streets before the cart of Lord Jagannath. There is a custom in Jagannath Puri that on every Ekadashi a lamp is lit on top of the temple. And one of the things that the Panda who lights the lamp chants is a mantra to Lord Jagannath to please protect the king. Because the king is a custodian, the protector of the temple. And he is also a great devotee, Raja Rishi, saintly king. But for Ramachandra Dev too, they stopped this. So Ramachandra Dev was aghast. He was devastated. There was nothing, no reason left for him to live. Nowhere could he enter into any temple, similar to what had happened to Salabeg some years ago, before that. So he would come at night in front of in the temple of Jagannath, and he would cry out loudly. Nobody was around, everybody was sleeping in the middle of the night. And he would prostrate himself outside the gate and beseech pitifully the Lord. And it is said that after doing that for a long time, Jagannath couldn't tolerate the suffering of his devotee. So he would leave his altar and come out of the gate and give him darshan. And when the Pandas, then he would go back of course. And when the Pandas came in the morning, then they would find that the flowers that had been offered to Jagannath and his ornaments were strewn all over the place from the altar right up to the gate and middle outside. And they were wondering, how on earth has this happened? They pulled up the watchmen and the guards, and the guards didn't have a clue. So this happened day after day, night after night this was happening. They just didn't know what was going on. Finally, the Lord appeared in a dream to the king and he explained the whole position. Then the king, he appeared to the priests. And he told them, because he was a king anyway, they appeared to the priests and they were also struck with wonder. And then it is said that the deity of Patita Pavan was especially installed just so that Ramachandra Dev too, whatever his name was now, he could have darshan of Jagannath. So his conversion was only an external formality. He remained a staunch, pure devotee of Lord Jagannath. So This is a story of Patita Pavana Jagannath, and there are many such stories. You can hear also from Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj. He's expert in this story. He hails from that state. And he knows so many such pastimes. If he comes here to London, you should ask him to tell you stories of Jagannath. He'll tell you real long, one after the other, beautiful stories of Jagannath and of his great devotees. So they're very inspirational stories. So therefore, this is something about Patita Pavan, the deity. Because Jagannath is very merciful, so he manifests himself on the outside gate to cast his glance of mercy on even those who are not permitted to enter. Patita Pavana Jagannath ki jai.